Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Greetings again. This is Bob Mallon with Military News, brought to you from our favorite website, military.com. Let's get started right away. The first article is titled, "The Army Wants Congress to Supercharge Its Barracks Budget to Fix Soldiers' Poor Living Conditions." Posted by Steve Bainon, military.com, published March 11, 2024. The Army is eyeing a massive increase in its funding to maintain aging barracks and build new base housings for junior troops in one of its most dramatic single budget requests to Congress in recent years. In its proposed budget, the Army is seeking a total of $2.35 billion for barracks in 2025, a major boost from the fiscal year $1.5 billion budget this year. The Army's proposed boost, which includes tripling its budget to construct new barracks, signals the service has taken enormous steps in elevating living conditions as a priority, siphoning funds from other parts of the service. The service's overall budget request is $185.9 billion, a 2% increase from this year. That, when adjusted for inflation, has the Army potentially operating at 2025 levels and with effectively the same budget. However, the final figures could change as Congress takes the request and starts working on its own version of the Army budget. That potential boost would fulfill what service leaders have long called a top priority and will likely be among the heaviest lifts in the proposed budget for the Army, which needs Congress to back and improve the added money. It signals that Army planners are finally trying to wrap their arms around the growing quality of life issues and poor housing conditions faced by junior troops. If successful, the major increase in funding for barracks improvements could also be among the most meaningful accomplishments in Army Secretary Christine Wernmuth's tenure, who, in an October interview with Military.com, said that the service needs a generational investment in barracks. Despite an overall flat Army budget and many competing resource requirements, we are significantly increasing funding for barracks construction, for restoration and modernization, Wernmuth said in a statement to Military.com. We will continue to work with Congress to make barracks a long-term investment priority, as the Army still faces a significant maintenance backlog in our large inventory of aging barracks. The ambitious request also puts the ball in Congress's court after lawmakers have started to signal that the service should make bigger cash requests to repair dilapidated barracks and replace its aging infrastructure, some of which is a half century old. A divided Congress has usually failed to pass a defense budget on time before the start of the fiscal year in October. In recent years, instead, it has usually relied on stopgap spending bills to avoid government shutdowns that buy Capitol Hill time to negotiate. That patchwork funding makes it difficult for the Army to plan major construction efforts, officials have warned in the past. Congress actually has yet to pass the Army's fiscal 2024 funding, which has had a significant impact on the service's barracks efforts for this year. At least five construction efforts worth $237 million have been stalled. One Army official told this to Military.com. Installations with stalled projects include Fort Liberty, North Carolina, Joint Base Lewis-McChord, Washington, and Natick Soldier System Center in Massachusetts. The Army's proposed 2025 budget also includes fully funding sustainment at $680 million, which is part of the larger $2.35 billion proposed barracks budget. In past years, roughly 15% of the budget has been siphoned off for other priorities. That sustainment request, which effectively funds barracks maintenance, is also an increase from this year's $567 million. The Army conducted a service-wide inspection of all its 6,700 barracks buildings last year, following a series of reports from Military.com on poor living conditions. It found 23% of them in poor or failing condition, about 5% of the housing in poor or failing condition was temporary barracks set up at locations such as schools or major training center, which are lower in priority compared to soldiers' homes. For decades, the Army has struggled with its aging infrastructure, much of it consisting of barracks infected with mold and pests, or otherwise unsafe or falling apart. The issue in some cases has gotten so bad that soldiers have reported being hospitalized or sick with symptoms consistent with long-term exposure to black mold. Meanwhile, the service is considering privatization of its barracks, with a pilot plan in the early stages at Fort Irwin, California. Army planners aim to meet with key construction contractors throughout the spring to see what expanding privatization could look like. In some scenarios, that could mean constructors take over existing barracks instead of outrightly building new ones. But for now, the Army is eyeing a major list of new construction projects, all of which house between 100 and 220 soldiers. They include, first bullet, a $117 million barracks project at Fort Johnson, Louisiana, a $180 million project for Old Guard soldiers at Joint Base Meyer-Henderson Hall in Virginia, a $161 million project at Joint Base Lewis-McChord in Washington State, a $39 million project at Fort Buchanan, Puerto Rico, $42 million for new training barracks at Camp Parks, California, $144 billion for advanced individual training, or AIT barracks, at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, $191 million for two Army Garrison Ansbach barracks projects in Germany, and a $61 million for Smith barracks at Army Garrison Rhineland-Pfalz in Germany. These things would be great once they get going if the money is passed. Next article from Military.com is titled, Inside a Navy Shock Trauma Platoon Deployed to NATO Exercises and What It Is Learning from the Ukraine War. Posted March 11, 2024 by Drew F. Lawrence. Alta, Norway is the location. Hospital Corpsman Second Class Zachary Matthews often sleeps with an IV bag close to his chest at night when he's in a cold place. Corpsmen who work in environments like the Arctic said they keep essential medical fluids near their bodies, using their natural heat to keep them warm. In trauma cases, serious matter, seconds matter, and there is no time to wait for liquids to thaw. On Saturday, Matthews helped lift a Norwegian soldier onto a gurney. Another needed intubating. Noise and energy flowed through the medical tent as X-ray machines snapped, surgical instruments clinked, and those fluids Matthews often kept close to his chest were passed back and forth between American and Norwegian hands without ice. Matthews, along with six other U.S. service members, are part of a U.S. Navy shock trauma platoon, a specialized unit that acts as a mobile emergency room on the battlefield. Again, taking part in NATO's massive Nordic Response 2024 exercise. That day, alongside the Norwegian military, they demonstrated what they would do if the unit received several casualties at once in a simulated but nevertheless serious exercise. With the second anniversary of the invasion of Ukraine passing 2 weeks ago, and NATO forces, along with the U.S. and Norwegian soldiers, military.com interviewed on Saturday, exercising close to Russia's border, now the war has helped reshape the way some military trauma professionals think about casualty care. It's looking like gone are the days of being able to set up massive field hospitals that won't be a target and where you're going to need to pack up and move quickly. U.S. Navy Lieutenant Catherine Loboa, the officer in charge of the shock trauma platoon, told us to military.com. As her corpsmen helped hurry patients into the operating room of the field tent, where Norwegian medical teams simulated emergency surgery. Over the last 20 years, the U.S. has fought counterinsurgency wars that, relative to the level now seen in Ukraine, allowed for robust and uncontested medical processes. Now, as the U.S. prepares for large-scale conventional conflicts, the realization that those systems need to change has finally set in. Unfortunately, a lot of this is based off the data that we had from the last conflict in the last 10 to 20 years, she said, pointing to blast injuries from improvised explosive devices as a hallmark injury of the global war on terror. There is a dearth of information available outside of those wars, she said. But, believe it or not, we're getting a ton of data from the casualties coming out of Ukraine. She pointed to artillery shells, mortars, as well as other heavy ordnance used by Russia that have wrought havoc on the Ukrainian battlefield. And while the Ukrainians pioneered drone use during that war, Russia has increased its own production and used them to deadly effect. Mines, too, have caused serious injuries and death. Those who survive those weapons are often left with burns, shrapnel injuries, and, in increasing numbers, lost limbs. While American service members experience these type of injuries during the global war on terror, the staggering volume of wounds suffered in Ukraine have placed pressure on its medical systems. In just 2 years, many tens of thousands of Ukrainians are estimated to be amputees due to the war, and the country's once fledgling prosthetic industry has grown to meet the need. Members of the shock trauma platoon said that they have watched the global events unfold and have thought about how they would meet their own needs during a potential conflict on their own. The biggest takeaway is we're going to have to flex. We're going to have to change, Matthews said. With medicine always evolving, we're looking at prolonged field care as our next option. How are we going to keep that casualty without a medevac for multiple hours? Are we going to bring out the loadout we need? Are there going to be different loadouts we need to try out with all this medical gear? Loboa said her team is learning that medical assets need to be maneuverable. Time is a paramount factor in trauma care. Installations such as the medical tent she helped direct can take up to 6 hours to set up, she said, adding that you can't really afford to waste that much setup time. To reduce those time constraints, she said, her team is working to provide specialized medical professionals closer to the front so patients can receive care sooner. Working out of urban environments, non-medical structures, and undesignated vehicles, like turning a van into an ambulance, she said, were all things the shock trauma platoon was eyeing. The flow of medical operations in Alta, Norway, where the units are participating in NATO's Nordic response, is tiered. Corpsmen down at the front with the line units assess injuries and determine if a Marine or sailor needs additional care. If they do, they are processed into field tents, such as the one Loboa and Matthews are working out of. If they need even more care, they are sent to a Norwegian civilian hospital. The partnership has been a boon for the Americans and Norwegians working together, they said. The shock trauma platoon and the Norwegian medical platoon started their first simulations on Saturday morning, and representatives from both units told military.com the unity has been smooth ever since. Blood and fluids, such as the ones Matthew spoke about, work differently in cold temperatures, and the Norwegians know how to manage that, he said. Even things such as making sure American stretchers can fit into Norwegian medical vehicles and vice versa is a critical piece of integration to check for. Normally, the shock trauma platoon would not have a surgical element and would be able to treat two or three urgent casualties at a time. With the Norwegians, that number has increased, and the medical unit is bolstered by an operating room that can perform emergency surgeries right there in that tent. The Americans also provide another skilled emergency team in the field tent to process and work on patients. I think it's important for us to work together, because if there is a war, if there is an Article 5, NATO needs to protect the members, Norwegian Major Richard Sodom, the company commander of the field hospital, told military.com. It's important that we do this during peacetime, working together as closely as we can. Next comes a topic close to the building plans we talked about previously from military.com. It's called Navy Marine Corps plan to spend more than $250 million on barracks restoration in 2025. PublishedMilitary.com by Konstantinian Toropin, March 11, 2024. The Navy and Marine Corps are both asking Congress for more than $250 million to address the declining state of their barracks buildings, something that has been highlighted both in media and government watchdog reports, amid a push to prioritize spending on sailors. The Navy wants to invest $204 million in the restoration of unaccompanied housing, a 24% increase from last year's request. And the Marine Corps said it's asking for $65 million, according to materials provided by the Department of the Navy on Friday. The move comes as military leaders struggle to fund all their priorities after last year's move by Congress to cap the defense budget as part of a bipartisan agreement. The Navy's budget director, Rear Admiral Ben Reynolds, stressed that the constraints forced them to make hard choices. In those hard choices, we prioritize readiness to deploy and operate our fleet, and we prioritize our people, Reynolds said in a briefing to reporters on Friday. The Navy and Marine Corps budget requests will now go to Congress, which will take the proposals and craft its own version of the military's budget for this year. Reynolds said the service made a deliberate choice to spend money on restoration and modernization first, to get it to a place where we want our young sailors to live, before shifting to building more new barracks. The budget documents provided to reporters on Friday said the Navy also wants to spend $1 billion over the next 5 years for housing construction and renovation. The Navy, like all the other services, was hammered in a government watchdog report released last year that found deplorable conditions such as bedbug and cockroach infestations, faulty heating and air conditioning, and security issues such as doors that couldn't lock and squatters that wouldn't move. Meanwhile, the Marine Corps ordered a force-wide wall-to-wall inspection of every Marine barrack around the world after a slew of reports and images that showed dirty and unlivable conditions at several Marine bases across the country and the world. Reynolds also noted that barracks modernization is just one aspect of the Navy's budgetary and the push to take better care of its sailors. The Navy's budget chief said that the service is also asking to fully fund the sustainment of its gyms as well as barracks buildings. Reynolds said the Navy wants to pour more money into our child development centers for our families and more money into our well-being and mental health facilities. According to budget documents, the service also aims to spend $25 million expanding the Naval Community College, fully funding its tuition assistance program, and increase funding for mental health and suicide prevention services by $52 million. Sailors and Marines, as well as troops and other services, are set for a 4.5% pay hike, an increase that complies with a law that says troops are entitled to an annual pay raise based on the Employment Cost Index. The Navy's number two civilian leader, Under Secretary of the Navy Eric Raven, told reporters that the services wants to do more for sailors but it is being held back by Congress, which still hasn't passed this year's budget, 2024, despite the new fiscal year starting last October. We have initiatives that are still pending in last year's budget that we are prevented from getting at, Raven told reporters on Friday. But the first order of business is to make sure that we're not moving backwards in the meantime, he said. Next comes an article from military.com. The Marine Corps is changing how Marines qualify on the rifle range. Military.com, Rachel Nostrand wrote it, published March 11, 2024. The Marine Corps has published new marksmanship guidelines, shifting how Marines are scored on their annual rifle qualifications and how those in the early stage of training are initially tested. The changes, which were released Monday and are effective immediately, include a greater focus on getting Marines to shoot at expert levels versus mere completion of their annual rifle qualification. Colonel Greg Jones, the commanding officer for Weapons Training Battalion at Marine Corps Base Quantico in Virginia, said Marines should be proud of the service for being really, really serious about finding better pathways to train and increase their lethality. So, when they go downrange, they're better able to defend themselves and their peers, he added. Under the latest version of Marine Corps Order 3574.2, Marines will no longer be allowed to accept marksman or sharpshooter scores on pre-qualification day at the range. Only those who shoot at the expert level will still be allowed to accept the score and opt out of the rest of the qualifying portion of their annual qualification, the ARQ. We don't want Marines to accept less than only their best effort, said Chief Warrant Officer 4 Joshua Grayek, Director of Marine Corps Marksmanship. The motivation for the move is similar to the 2023 update, allowing Marines more than one chance per year to pass their annual qualification. Another update will allow Marines to shoot in the prone position while using the magazine as a sort of bipod support for their rifle. Previously, this was only allowed while zeroing during the Table 1 phase, which is shot at various positions from 2, 3, and 500-yard lines. The change is reflective of the newer and higher-quality Magpul magazines used compared to the metal magazines of old, Jones said. He added, this is a prime example of more changes to come that prove the Marine Corps is working to cross-pollinate best practices from other advances in marksmanship over the entry-level training. Marine training at the various schools of infantry and the basic school will now be allowed to use the rifle marksmanship assessment, known as the RMA, instead of finishing Table 3 and Table 6, which Fleet Marines will still be required to complete. These tables traditionally include shooting with night vision goggles and firing at targets posted at unknown distances, skills that are similarly included in the RMA, just under new scoring standards. According to Grayek, the RMA offers a better system of scoring that gives Marines more accurate feedback and therefore should allow them a greater chance at improving. For most legacy marksmanship, the only evaluation criteria was where the bullet landed on the target, Grayak said. But now, we're quantifying how quick your first shot was, how fast you can present to the target, how fast you can reload, and then present again for your follow-up shots. Through the RMA, Marines will be given feedback on every single round, Jones said. Officer training will undergo a similar assessment tailored to the more limited timeline of that basic school. It builds on the increased difficulty added in 2021 updates to the ARO, a test first established in early 1900s and used updated data analytic systems like the Mantis X, Blackbeard X system to give Marines what they need to be their most lethal selves, Grayak and Joseph said. The instructor to second shooter ratio will be smaller, allowing for more individualized help and feedback. The order also notes that updates will be made to the Combat Pistol Program, CPP. Jones and Grayak clarified this will include scoring shots on target along the same standards as the rifle qualification, which have to hit more lethal spots like the head and chest. The changes are thanks to an assessment started about 5 years ago that essentially revealed Marines are not good at four things when it comes to their marksmanship, Jones explained. The lethality assessment showed that Marines do not do a very good job of shooting while moving, shooting at moving targets, and shooting at an unknown distance. The fourth thing was that the service wasn't collecting enough data to appropriately assess marksmanship, Jones said. That led to a 2022 change in how Marines in the fleet are supposed to qualify to the range, including shooting from positions more closely resembling those found in combat situations, while also wearing the same flak jackets and Kevlar Marines wear when forward deployed. In the latter half of 2023, the changes dictated in the updated order were phased in aboard the recruit depot and the schools of infantry. The early results from those changes appeared promising, according to Jones and Grayak. The data analytics really just began 21st century information age technology down to the level of every Marine to help them be more lethal, Jones said. This helps us to be more ready when the nation least is ready, and we're not going to rest on our laurels just because we're in a time of peace. Next, we have an article for military.com. Ukraine rebels repel Russian drone swarms as Moscow retires a Navy chief. Published March 11, 2024. Dateline Kiev. Ukraine's air defenses fended off another large-scale Russian attack with combat drones overnight, the military said on Sunday, while the Kremlin appointed a new head for the Navy. In Ukraine, all but four of the 39 approaching drones were apparently intercepted and destroyed. There were reportedly no casualties. I would like to thank everyone who achieved this result, Air Force Commander Mykola Olechuk wrote on his Telegram channel on Sunday morning. The past week saw almost nightly attacks with dozens of drones by one or both sides. According to Ukraine's military, an army drone hit an industrial building in the southern Odessa region in the latest assault. Another damaged a power line in the neighboring Myakolyiv region. The Iranian-made Shahad drones were launched from the Russian coast of the Sea of Azov and from the Crimean Peninsula. Russia also reportedly fired four converted SAM-300 anti-aircraft missiles at ground targets in the eastern Kharkiv and Donetsk regions. A simultaneous night attack by Ukraine resulted in a drone hitting a fuel depot in the Russian border region of Kursk and catching fire. The local governor, Roman Starovit, wrote on Telegram about this incident. The fire brigade was dealing with the incident very well, he said. In addition to heavy ground fighting in the east and south of Ukraine, both sides have increased their use of explosive-laden drones since Russia launched its full-scale invasion of its neighbors more than 2 years ago. Ukrainian drones have increasingly targeted supply facilities supporting the Russian military operations. Separately, the Russian newspaper Izvestia, citing unnamed sources, reported on Sunday that the commander of the Russian Navy, Admiral Nikolai Yevmenov, had been retired. Yevmenov had been replaced by Alexander Moisheyev, the previous commander of the Northern Fleet, the report said. The website of the Russian Military Ministry of Defense did not initially provide any information about reasons. Izvestia did not provide a reason for the personnel change. Yevmenov's departure came after the Russian Black Sea Fleet recently suffered considerable losses of combat ships and soldiers due to attacks by Ukrainian missiles and so-called naval drones, which are unmanned boats loaded with explosives. Due to the threat posed by the Ukrainian armed forces, Russian naval combat units have already withdrawn from the occupied Crimean Peninsula. Now comes an article from military.com. Father of Marine killed in Afghanistan. Withdrawal arrested after interrupting Biden's State of the Union speech. Authored by Michelle Nostrand, updated March 8, 2024. The father of Marine killed during the 2021 withdrawal from Afghanistan interrupted President Joe Biden's State of the Union speech on Thursday night, crying out, "Abbey Gate, Abbey Gate," the name of the airport gate where his son was killed by a suicide bomber. Steve Nakui, the father of fallen Marine Lance Corporal Karim Nakui, was arrested by Capitol Police for the outburst, which also included yelling his son's name while Biden spoke of violent crime in the U.S. Lance Corporal Nakui was one of 13 service members and at least 170 Afghans killed in the bombing at Hamid Karzai International Airport on March 26, 2021. Last night at approximately 10:15 p.m., a man disrupted the State of the Union address by yelling. Our officers warned him to stop, and when he did not, the man was removed from the House galleries and was arrested. U.S. Capitol Police told military.com this in an email. Nikui was charged with crowding, obstructing, or incommoding a routine charge on Capitol Hill, Capitol Police said. People who illegally demonstrate, disrupt Congress, typically are released after they pay a $50 fine. So the misdemeanor charge is resolved without going to court. In addition to losing Karim, Nikui's other son took his own life in 2022 at a park near where Lance Corporal Nikolai's grave rests just before the first anniversary of his death. Nikolai could not be reached for comment. He attended the address as a guest of Representative Brian Mast, Republican of Florida, who told Military.com in an email he believed the charge against Nikolai for the outburst was disgraceful. Mr. Nikolai lost his son due to Joseph Biden's incompetence and lost another son to grief over his brothers being killed, Mast told Military.com. This man and his family have gotten America more than I could personally bear. And to attack him with a bullshit charge of demonstrating is a disgrace. Nikolai and his wife, Shana Chappelle, have been vocal critics of the Biden administration's handling of the withdrawal. The Biden administration, to which I have two dead sons, Chappelle wrote in an Instagram post in December, this is not healing, so I'm taking it one day at a time. That's all I can do. Sergeant Taylor Vargas Andrews, a Marine sniper who lost an arm and a leg in the blast, said troops warning about the suspected bomber had been ignored in the moments leading up to the blast. Plain and simple, we were ignored, Vargas Andrews said, about his and other efforts to get approval to shoot the person they suspected to be the suicide bomber. My body was overwhelmed from the trauma of the blast. My abdomen had been ripped open. Every inch of my exposed body, except for my face, took ball bearings and shrapnel. The Biden administration has largely cast the evacuation as a success, pointing to the 120,000 people, including 76,000 Afghans, who were airlifted out. But tens of thousands of Afghans who helped the U.S. military and so are eligible to migrate to the U.S. were left behind in the hasty withdrawal, while the August 26 suicide bombing remains one of the single deadliest days of U.S. forces for the entire war. Well, that's going to be about it for this issue of Military News. Again, thank you for joining me. My name is Bob Mallon. We'll talk again next time. Be good to each other and take care.
Hello and welcome to the Insights and Soundbites podcast, where people facing vision loss share insights about what has helped them cope and adjust.
And a little tiny voice said, I just don't want to live this way.
My name is Douglas Walker. Today, we'll hear from Marion. Marion will share with us just how important it is to listen to the right voice.
Hello, my name is Marion McKee. I live in Kentucky. I have retinitis pigmentosa, and I have been going blind over my lifetime from a teenager to now. I'm totally blind. And I just remember concerning myself about, oh, what can I see? How long am I going to see? I know I'm going blind, and on and on and on. And I think I let go a lot of years worrying about going blind when I wasn't utilizing the best of my vision in the moment. And now that I look back, I think, oh my goodness, it would have been totally okay just to stay present in the moment. Because now I'm totally blind, and I'm finding that staying present in the moment helps me to navigate the next moment and the next moment. I was talking to a friend one day who's also totally blind, and we were just talking, and She was very vulnerable. And a little tiny voice said, I just don't want to live this way. If I can't, you know, do X, Y, Z, or if I can't do it the way I used to do it. And I heard that little tiny voice in me, and I cried. I didn't realize that, you know, all of these years that was underneath my resistance to a lot of learning how to be blind. Grateful for Hadley and everyone there and everywhere that I've learned how to make lemonade with lemons. I also changed that little voice into another voice that I want to hear now, and that is, okay, I'm going to be okay. I am not weak. I'm strong. I am not ignorant. I just haven't learned how to navigate efficiently the way I feel. And most of all, I am brave and courage. And I'm not listening to that little tiny voice that's not helping me. I'm thinking, that's just the day that I'm going to encourage lemonade and maybe a margarita. Can't you make lemons with margaritas? Well, it doesn't really matter. Just that careful what I tell myself, because I'm always listening. And thank you for listening.
Was there something that someone said to you or something that happened along the way that made all the difference in the world in helping you adjust to living with vision loss? We'd love to hear from you. If you'd like to share with us, just leave us a message on our Insights and Soundbites voicemail by calling 847-512-4867. Or you can use your smartphone or computer and email us a recording to podcast@hadleyhelps.org. Again, my name is Douglas Walker. Take care, and I'll see you next time.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.